A little advice. A little advice. Come on, come on, come on, yeah. Just a little advice. Just a little advice with Christine Little. Check it out.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Little Advice Podcast, a podcast where I, comedian Christine Little, gives a little advice to one of my guests. Now, it's only a little advice because I am not a trained therapist, but I do have a BA in psychology. I read a lot of self-help books, and I'm a little bit of a know-it-all. And my last name's Little, so I was like, you know what? Let's just call this a little advice. This is episode number 19 with a very funny comedian, writer, producer, Brandi Posey. She's been in so many comedy festivals, and her first album, her first stand-up record, Opinion Cave, debuted at number one on iTunes. So give that a listen. Yeah, right? I was going to say look or check out, but that didn't make sense. But check it out. Yeah. And we talk about dealing with living in a sad world, basically. How there's so much that's going on that's beyond our control and how to cope with that. This is more of like a discussion type podcast, not so much of a like, hey, here's the advice directly, but I really enjoy talking with her and I think you guys are going to enjoy it as well. Also, if you guys have time or just please do it anyway, give us a rate, review, share. That helps out so much. Just scroll down to this page on iTunes and click 5 stars. And without further ado, here's episode number 19, Brandi Posey of A Little Advice. I'm sitting here with Brandi Posey. Hi, Brandi.
Hey, good to see you, Christine.
Thanks. Good to see you, too. Ooh, you got a radio voice.
I do.
Hello, Christine.
It's great now, but if the fires were worse, then you wouldn't hear me because my volume would be so low because my voice gets craggy, like, real fast.
Are you a Taurus?
I'm not.
Oh.
I'm a Pisces.
Oh, okay. I heard this thing that, like, Tauruses have throat problems.
Oh,
I am
interesting.
One.
Okay,
I glottal fry a lot. Like
it's glottal fry.
It's like hello, but people do it when they're emotional too.
Oh, interesting. Gotcha.
Brandi's got green hair. It looks amazing.
Thank you. Thanks.
And she's got a little green on her shirt.
Wearing a Southside Serpent shirt because I love Riverdale.
Oh, I've not watched that show.
It's such trash. It's just like good trash TV. I like hate reality shows. And when this came out, I was like, oh, cool. A teen drama that's like solving mysteries, but also like weird, sexy teens.
I'm into it.
Yeah, it's very,
I should start watching it. A lot of people have said good things about it.
It's a good escape, for sure. Yeah, I'm a big fan of it. If you need just, like, a dumb show, like, yeah, show me, like, a weird monster that they're trying to fight and give me a weird mystery that doesn't matter, and the characters are very dumb and, like, super, like, teenage woke, too, which is adorable.
Oh.
Like, they're always just like, and this is why the world is the way it is! And it's just very, like... It's very fun to watch.
they look creepy.
Oh, yeah. For sure, because they're not teens. They're all, like, in their late 20s.
Yeah. Like, what are we doing here? And then you were telling me about a donut place by your house.
Yes.
I don't want to give them a shout-out because they didn't pay for this. Actually, you can. What is it called?
I will shout them out. Colorado Donuts in Eagle Rock, California. They are the best donut place in Los Angeles. In the state that I've actually ever had.
Really?
Yeah, I love Colorado Donuts. They're
You're
great.
Really talking them up.
I love them.
They better not have boring donuts if
no,
I go there.
They don't. They also, like, they make, they have all your classic favorites, but then they also do, like, themed holiday ones, which are really great. They just had, like, some little, vampires and stuff. They've got some, like, little turkeys and stuff right now, but it's not like hipster, like, ugh, it, like, looks cute, but it doesn't taste good. Like, their stuff always tastes good first. Like, it's near Donut Friend in Highland Park, which I really don't like, because Donut Friend is this, like, hipster donut place where donuts are all $5 each, and they're all named after, like, obscure bands, and, like, they're not good, but it's, like, all about the pun of the name, and it's...
How affordable is the one by your house?
It's gonna start at, like, 75 cents.
Okay, so they're normal.
Yeah, they're, like, a third-generation Filipino-owned little spot. They know everybody's name.
Third-generation.
Yeah, you can buy your scratchers there.
Really? Okay, you're really selling me on this
place.
You want
a donut and a scratcher, Colorado Donuts, and Eagle Rock is the place to go.
If you guys want some little advice on donuts, third-generation reminds me of this news article I read about this. Have you heard about this guy called The Watcher? He goes, no. Like, okay, so there's this house where if you move into it, mm-hmm. this guy, or I'm assuming it's a guy because this okay. isn't something women do.
Yeah, yeah.
But he watches the family okay. and he like knows things about them and they have no idea who it is. Mm-hmm. They hired private investigators mm-hmm. and an FBI. No one's been able to track mm. who this person is. And they're like, my father watched the house and now I watch the house oh, and his shit. So they've been doing it for a really long Whoa. Time.
Oh man, I kind of like it.
That really? What if it was you?
I mean, it's creepy. It's creepy, but I also like, I like a tradition. I like have weird respect for it. I'm like, okay, it's a weird thing to do. You probably shouldn't, but it's weird to like, I don't know. What else does that family it have?
Bonds the family.
Yeah.
They're just like a normal family.
Weird.
Probably. They're yeah. probably like a normal family. And like, also we write harassing letters to neighbors. It's just what we do.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, bad, but also like, I don't know. There's something, it's very weird. Like they're harmless though. They've been around that long.
No, they're like threatening. And
oh, really?
I don't know if they've hurt anybody. I'll have to okay. look it up again.
Okay.
Now I want a donut. So what's your problem? I'm all over the place.
We were talking a little bit before and it's like, I think my problem is that I tend to, I'm a really smart person and it's very isolating to be smart because I feel like a lot of the time when I see an issue, I'm always like, yeah, that's part of it, but also it's always more mm-hmm. than we think it is. You know what I mean?
You see the bigger picture.
Yeah. And that's like very frustrating to just be like, no, but like things aren't good.
It's kind of like when someone's sick and you treat the symptoms instead of the source of the problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And you can see that mm-hmm. in society.
Yeah.
So tell me about how that's been isolating for you. Like growing up, was it hard? Did you have?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember the first like real example of it sticking out in my mind was I remember being in like first grade, and like Sunday school. This is also when I was just like, organized religion is bullshit.
When you were in first grade?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Because I was like the only kid in my class, in Sunday school class, who could read fluently. So I always got called on to like read the scripture out loud and stuff.
Okay.
And all the other kids would like, oh, you can read. And I was like, yeah, don't shame me for reading. I remember just being like, y'all are dumb. I don't want to be your friends because you're like trying to make me feel bad for being smart.
Where was this?
This is in Maryland. And like a suburban part of Maryland. It's just like, I grew up in kind of like a working class neighborhood and then we moved to a slightly more affluent place after my grandfather died and we moved into his house basically. yeah, it was like a working class neighborhood and like we,
like, ooh, Brandy with her books.
Yeah.
And I like Beauty and the Beast when she's like, the mm-hmm. town's yelling at her for, or yeah. singing about her because yeah. she's reading.
I really identified with Belle pretty hard. A lot. Well, and so that happened. And then also I remember that was also the year that we like studied the creation story for the first time. And I had a really hard time being like, okay, so God was just like in the dark for like a long time by himself before he decided to create something. That's weird. It's mm-hmm. weird that he just sat in the dark. Why did he get there? Why didn't he make a friend to sit like, well, you know, and I remember questioning my teacher and my teacher just being like, you just have to believe. And I remember just being like, no, my parents have always told me not to just blindly believe things because if you do that, then you end up in the back of a van.
Oh God. What do your parents do?
My dad's a CPA and my mom passed away a few years ago and it's okay. She was a housewife, but had like a master's in, parks and recreation.
Oh cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, I just remember just being told you should always question things, never blindly take what people say.
Yeah.
And then I remember like being in Sunday school and then being like, no, you have to blindly believe what we say. And I was like, no, that doesn't make sense to me. And I just checked out immediately. And it was,
oh, that sucks.
Yeah. Yeah. But I just remember that was like the first time that I remember being like, oh, I see something that nobody else does and everyone is like being weird about it. So I guess I'll just feel like I'm another here.
That would make me feel suspicious as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up in religion and stuff, and I still mm-hmm. am. I mean, I wouldn't say I was like religious, but you mm-hmm. know, spiritual. I am a Christian.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to like study and read mm-hmm. and like get for to sure. the bottom of things instead of just blindly believing.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's definitely like I'm not like completely anti-religion. So when my mom passed away, my mom was very religious and like the church stepped up and helped a lot. And like, aww. I, it's a great place for community, as long as your community is, like, open-minded and, like, you know, is not bigoted in any way or whatever. So it's like I see its purpose in a lot of people. I think I've just found that community in other ways in life. You know, it's like whenever you hear comics that are like staunchly anti-religion, I'm just like, yeah, but you go to open mics all the time. It's like kind of the same thing in a lot of ways.
You know what? Yeah, I think being anti-religion is a religion in and of itself.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, we're all just looking for titles.
It's kind of like, it's weird that they're like, oh, they're not open-minded, they suck, they're stupid. It's like, well, are you being open-minded when you're bashing them?
Yeah.
You're being like a total hypocrite right now.
Yeah, but I see you checking my phone when somebody that doesn't look like you is trying jokes on stage. So tell me how open-minded you are.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, other ways, did it affect you, like, as a teenager, in your developmental years?
I mean, not quite as much, like, in school. I was very lucky, like, the middle school and the high school that I went to especially were like, are ranked like one of the top public schools in like the country, basically.
Oh,
yeah. So I got like a really good education, and also like always knew that I was smart, but didn't realize I really was until I graduated, because it was like highly competitive at my high school. Like I graduated with like a 3.87. I was 120th in my class. Like
wow.
It was like, it was not cool to not do your work. Like it was like, because where I'm from in Maryland is, we're a suburb of D.C., kind of. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of people's parents work for, like, the Pentagon or the NSA. Like,
oh, wow.
Everyone's parents are spies, basically.
Whoa!
Yeah. So it's like your parents are like, cool, I work with the president all day. Like, that's the bar that you need to... And that used to mean something.
Yeah.
So, right. Yeah. But, yeah, it's... So it's, like, it wasn't cool to, like, slack off or anything. So it was just this, like, I have, like, a... really hardcore, like, work ethic because
so you were,
of
like,
it.
Peer pressured to, but, like, in a good way.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
To be smart.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was, like, it's not cool to, like, not get good grades. Like,
oh,
just
gosh.
Go for it.
You would have hated me in high school.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I got it together in college. I barely got into college. And,
yeah.
And I was, like, crushed it.
Yeah.
But high school, not so much.
Well, I mean, I remember in... seventh grade was like a year where I'd had straight A's up through seventh grade, and that also was kind of the year that I realized that like I gotta chill out a little bit, because I was in algebra in seventh grade, which I think was like 2 or 3 years ahead, and I got like a C my first semester.
Oh, no.
And I'd never gotten anything but an A before, and I like put myself through the ringer and was just like, this is bad, and I had like a breakdown about it, and my parents were just like, we're not going to punish you because you're punishing yourself way more and we don't know what to do about this. And I remember that happening and being like, oh, you got to figure out a way to like work hard, but also not like make this your identity and chill. So I like,
realized that in seventh grade.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cause I was like, I don't want to feel like this anymore. How can I not let myself feel like this?
So what'd you do?
I made myself get, like, a B the next semester.
Made yourself get a B?
Yeah, I was just like, I'm just not going to do homework for a couple of days. And just, like, I mean, I aced all my tests and stuff, but I just, like, was not going to, like... I was like, I need to be okay with doing this and knowing that I have control to do this if I want to.
So what made you, like, have that insight in seventh grade to not...
I don't know. I mean, I think I've always been somebody that has, like, I have a lot of perspective beyond my years. I've been told that a lot by people.
Do you
think
you're reincarnated?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. Who knows? Who the fuck knows? My grandmother was also my best friend growing up, and I think that has a lot to do with it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, she was like, she passed away right after I graduated college. So I had her like in my life, like my entire childhood, basically. And she was this like badass lady that like was born in 1917, and she was like the middle of five kids, but she was also like, her mom had gotten divorced after she had the first two kids, and then she was like this bastard.
Her mom got divorced?
Yeah, and it was like frowned upon.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then they had my grandmother before she married. The way that the dates worked out, she was pregnant, which is why she married her second husband. So a lot of my grandmother's family disowned her because she was the bastard child of the family.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And it like, but it also like, she didn't let that make her feel shame. She let that, she just became the best version of herself. Oh, that she
so
could
you,
be.
You probably picked up on that from her.
Yeah. A lot of shit I got from her. Like she, her younger brother was, he had an enlarged heart when he always did, but when he was a kid, he was like bedridden because of it. So she'd come home from school cause he couldn't go to school and she would like teach him the stuff that she had learned in school that day. And little neighborhood kids would come over and throw rocks at the kid that was, like, on the porch because he was this weird kid with a heart that's supposed to die. He was, like, supposed to die when he was a kid, but he lived to be, like, 75.
And kids threw rocks at him because of
Yeah, neighborhood kids were like, who's this weird porch kid? Oh, and my grandmother would go and just beat the fuck out of him. Yeah, she, like, got in fights and stuff, and she was like, uh-uh.
Your grandma sounds awesome.
She was great, yeah. She was the best. She, like, retired because she worked in, like, factories during World War II, and then, like,
Did she unionize?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. She's part of union, for sure. Yeah. And when she retired and she, like, became a housewife for a while, and then once she got her Social Security, she was like, I'm bored. And she went back to go work at, like, BJ's is, like, a Costco on the East Coast. So she went to go work at BJ's because she was like, everybody likes the sample lady. I don't know. I think I'm a sample lady. So she was, like, a sample lady at a BJ's, and she, like... She grew up, where she grew up was like a very white area, so she had her like first black friends when she worked at BJ's, and she would just be like, I'm at lunch with my black friends, and she was just so excited because she just like never, she like grew up in this area where she never knew people like that, and she was just always open-minded and always excited about stuff like her entire life, and like just always, like marked the beat of her own drum kind of, and was very good about being like truly didn't care what people thought of her. And, like, I internalized, like, a lot of the lessons that she taught me. Like, pretty early on, too.
I can see that. Mm-hmm. I can see that.
Yeah.
With the way you think and look at the bigger picture. And
And
that green hair.
Also have, like, a self-righteous streak the way that she did about just, like, I mean, beating up kids that were trying to beat up her brother was like, okay, I probably could have told an adult, but I took it into my own hands.
Yeah.
I think that's like the stand up part of me is just like, no,
vigilante.
This is, yeah, exactly. Verbal vigilante. For sure.
Oh, that's a good branding thing.
Yeah.
Vigilante.
Yeah. So I definitely get a lot of perspective from her. Cause she also like,
did she have a lot of friends or was she? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. She was like a really popular.
Now you have a lot of friends.
Yeah.
Would you say?
Yeah.
So it doesn't, so being like smarter, which it kind of sounds like.
Like, I hope this doesn't sound like something
it sounds
bragging a lot.
Douchey, right?
Yeah. Okay. Like try not to make it sound douchey, but it is just like, it's difficult sometimes of just like, people are upset about some stuff, and I'm like, it's not that thing that you're upset about, though. Like, it's actually about this instead. And it's like that...
Can you give me an example?
Let me try to think of a good one. The healthcare debate and just, like, capitalism writ large, basically. Like, My mom passed away of a kind of rare neurological disease that doesn't have a lot of research done about it. It's called multiple system atrophy.
Never heard of
it. Yeah. It doesn't have a walk or a ribbon of any kind. Because it's not a profitable thing for people to research. Because not enough people get it, that it wouldn't make anybody money. And Robin Williams actually had the same thing, which
really?
Is why he killed himself.
Oh, I thought it was, I heard it was Parkinson's.
It's in that family.
Right.
Yeah.
Neurodegenerative disease.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But his was making him hallucinate like horrific things.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You like hallucinate horrific things and it gets worse and worse and you lose control of how to control your body and your mind completely. And it's horrible, and it's a very rare thing, and that's why he actually killed himself. It has nothing to do with depression. He just, like, wanted to make it stop, and there was no research to make it stop. And my mom had basically the same thing. She hadn't gotten to the point of, like, the hallucinations and stuff, but she was, like, completely bedridden and, like, had lost control of how to use her basic motor functions and stuff. Mm. And, you know, so there's a lot going on there, but, like, the reason that no research is being done in those areas is because it's not profitable.
Right.
And it's not profitable because of capitalism. It's like a system that we live in.
We live in a system where you don't do anything unless it's, can capitalize on it.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, if Robin Williams is one of the most privileged people that's ever lived in the world. He's a straight white male of vast amounts of wealth that most people will never have. And if the system failed him, then it's a broken system, in my mind, you know. And it's like, no, well, if we couldn't save Robin Williams, you know, or my mom, it's like the biggest, you know, if the system doesn't work for the most vulnerable person within it, it's broken. But if it also doesn't work for one of, like, the biggest people in the world, then it's also broken. And, like, I've like, always kind of connected stuff like that where I'm like, no, it's, like, fucked up. And, like, it won't change. And, like, that is, like, where people are like, no, things are getting better. And I'm like, no, it's not. Because, like, billionaires aren't afraid.
Do you have, like, does it give you a bleak outlook on things?
I mean, probably, yeah. Not in the day-to-day, but, like, in the long term, yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't see things changing until there's, like, a revolutionary overhaul of the system. You know, it's like they're not going to give up their wealth or the way that we do things unless that happens, you know? And I mean, it's, in my mind, it's like you always have to follow the money and where the money's coming from. And like corporate Democrats take money from the same places as most Republicans. And it's like,
we're run by corporations.
Yeah, we completely are.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel, it can make you feel like you don't have a lot of control. And it's like just infuriating to also like, to know that and to know that there are so many people that are just like, what are you talking about? That's crazy. And I'm like, no, but it is like the way it is. Like, that is the world we live in. And it's like, I have a hard time like reconciling like my internal sense of justice with like living in such an unjust world that is like,
that's that vigilante part of you that wants to like fix it and do something and rebel against it.
Yeah.
But you have such limited control.
Yeah,
you absolutely can't really do much.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, I can just talk about it all the time, but then that's kind of a buzzkill. People just, like, would rather, you know, we'll do whatever. And it's just kind of like, no, but this is we can change it. It's just, this is the world we live in. And people are very comfortable. And also society has, like, made us very individualized. So we're all working in our own lane. So it's, like, so hard to build any sort of like collective action in general either.
That's so true.
You know, and it's just, that is just frustrating because it's changing people's like like core values that they think they have, but they don't actually, if you really question them. But it is kind of this like, a lot of people don't just, I constantly question like my place in the world. And I think a lot of people don't do that. And that bums me out a lot.
What do you mean question your place in the world?
Just like, what we're talking about, where it's like, how this is like where I am, what are the systems that are at work against me or working for me, like, you know, it's like, what and why, you know, why is it this way?
You know, I don't know what I was reading, some self-help book, because that's what the point of this podcast is about.
I'm sorry.
But it was saying that back in the day, the self-help of that time was like all centered around honesty, integrity, and your core, having like good values.
Yeah.
But then there was a shift out of that into like always be selling and like how to sell people stuff, how to do this, how to do like, and it became pretty selfish.
Yeah.
And then it kind of seems like you're getting ahead in a way, but in reality, you're working against yourself.
Yeah.
As a whole.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, I mean, modern feminism like has a lot of problems right now because it's like we're telling women to basically be like become
like the dudes,
become like the dudes, and then hire people to do the things that we can't do because we're out making money. And it's like, okay, so you're still oppressing somebody else. You know, you're still creating this second class of people that should be helped. Like,
well, what do you think would be a good solution?
Well, I mean I think we live wrong in a lot of ways. I think we should be like living more collectively where it's like, okay, cool. We're like like the nuclear family was developed after the French Revolution to basically like we did not always live in like mom, dad, and children.
It was like multi-generational.
Yeah, it was like multi-generational. Yeah, and like other other people lived in houses, and that way it was like tasks were shared among people. You know, and
but the idea of that, honestly, yeah. For me, I'm like, I don't want all these people in my space. I need mm-hmm. all this space to myself, and mm-hmm. I want to do everything for myself.
Well, and I think that's...
And it's kind of... And yeah. I think that leads to depression yeah. and isolation.
I think it does.
And just yeah. like this false sense of mm-hmm. Security.
Well, but that also doesn't mean that you couldn't like you live in like an apartment complex. That doesn't mean that you couldn't have your own space here. But
are you talking about this right here is an apartment complex?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a condo
association. Okay, I'm so sorry. Sorry.
I filled out a lot of paperwork.
A condo association.
Thank
but
you.
It doesn't mean that collectively you guys couldn't have, like, group kitchens or, like, hey.
We have a community grill out there.
Yeah.
Does that pool.
You guys ever get together and use it? Like, do you know your neighbors?
Yeah, I know some of them.
Okay.
I usually try to avoid knowing neighbors, but here I've lived mm-hmm. here. This is the longest I've ever lived anywhere in yeah. my life, so I do know some of them, yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I think if people just, like, stopped seeing people as, like, things on the other end of an app that are, like, delivering things
for
them.
Or what they can do for them.
Yeah, like, right. we're commodifying each other constantly, and there's something very soulless about that
yeah.
that is deeply depressing to me. You know, it's like, we're capable of more than just, like, our duties for money. You
do
know?
You try to do any of that in your personal life, like where you live? Do you have a sense of community?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe tell me yeah, about
yeah.
that.
Yeah, so I actually live in Eagle Rock, and where I live, there's
good
like
donuts.
Yeah, I got Colorado donuts. We have like I live in like a trailer park over there, and like there's like 32 houses. And it's not like an Airstream; it's like a house, but it's like a mobile home basically.
Okay,
do you know it's like those. When you're driving down the road and you see like a double wide, like those like houses
that are back. Like it's like wide load and
yeah,
they're
yeah.
carrying a house.
Yeah, I live in one of those.
Oh, crazy.
Yeah, yeah, I like own one of those.
I want to see
Rock.
It.
Yeah, come on over to Eagle Rock. It's okay. fun. But all of our neighbors are like, we all know each other. We all like hang out together. We all like, we do quarterly, we do like potlucks and stuff to kind of get together and see what's going on. We have like a phone tree within each other just to be like, hey, I picked up a package at your place. I'm gonna keep it at my house. Like we're like pretty connected.
My neighbor does that. She calls me Christina, but she's well intentioned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think intent is always important to remember with people. But like, I mean, she should learn your name because it's literally on the package.
She can't speak English that great, so I just give her a pass.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard. But yeah, I mean, like we work together and that kind of stuff. We like have done like little donor drives and stuff within the community too, with canned foods and stuff like that. Like a big thing that I do every year when I travel a lot for comedy, and I like whenever I stay at hotels, I always take like hotel toiletries and I have a big bag of them at home.
Oh.
And at the end of the year, I divide them up into little Ziploc bags and take them down to the downtown women's shelter because it's a way to like, you know, like they give them out to like homeless women
on
the streets.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. And it's like, doesn't cost me anything. It's just like saving them up over the course of a year. I get like a big ass bag of them. I think last year I brought like 120 little kits or whatever. And
dang.
It's like, yeah, it's just
a lot of traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I will also like, if I see like the cleaning ladies in the hallway, I'll ask them, I'm like, hey, can I grab a couple extra things? And I'm always like, yeah, yeah, go for it. So it's like a fun thing I do during the year. And it's like, there's so many little ways that I think you can think outside of yourself that I wish more people would like, I feel very fulfilled because of
so
it too.
Seems like it's a mind shift.
Yeah.
Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you guys probably noticed in this podcast so far that we have not really addressed a problem, but maybe like an existential thing.
Yeah.
And, Brandy informed me that she already does a lot of therapy, so she's good.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's just like, I feel very helpless in the world sometimes. And I try to do these small things to make myself feel like I have some control over doing something good. And I think it's kind of just like...
I think that does matter.
Yeah.
Maybe this is something I can help. Well, you mm-hmm. probably already know this. So,
yeah.
But would you do things at an individual level? Like, even mm-hmm. if you're just smiling at someone or being friendly to someone, it does affect a greater amount of people and make more of a difference than you realize.
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you seen the movie Pay It Forward?
I have not.
Oh my God, it makes me cry so hard. It's with the Haley Joel Osment, but when he was a kid, and Helen Hunt and Kevin Spacey, and he has this project where to make the world a better place, and so he does three big things for people that they can't ever repay him for, and then they do three big things, for and then they. Else. But it's like this huge movement.
Cool.
And, yeah, I like and that. It's so inspirational. Be cool if people do that more, like actual in real life. And I think some people do, and they can be inspired by others. But
yeah, I mean that's kind of what I'm trying. That's the best way I think I can like that I've been able to at least kind of make it work for myself. Because I'm always just like, every time I bring home new toiletries, I like post it on Instagram. I'm like, hey, doing that thing again. Dropping here's a boomerang. I mean, dropping them in my little bag, like. It's an easy thing to do, and I've had a couple people that have, like, brought me theirs at the end of the year, too, and they're like, hey, do you want to throw these in with yours and stuff, too?
That's so a good
it's
idea.
Like, yeah, it's just, like, little...
Do you have a, like, a place set up or anything for people who want to drop them off to you? You probably don't want everyone going in your house, but...
I have a P.O. box for my podcast. I mean, that would work, I guess. If you live in L.A.
Well, both of my listeners might be, inclined to...
If you feel like sending me a bunch of toiletries, or just hit me up on, like, Twitter or Instagram.
But what's your handle?
Brandazzle. Huh. On Twitter or Instagram. You can find me there. And I'll meet you if you're in L.A., whatever. Otherwise...
Follow her, because she tours around a lot, too.
Yeah, follow me on all the shit.
Yeah, that feeling of... being, you feel helpless in the world, is that what you said?
Yeah, and just like...
Is there a time that you feel more helpless than others? Is there something that sets that off?
Let me think. When I see people championing stuff that I think is wrong is like kind of where, like, I don't know if that's coming out, but we just had like, the elections just happened in 2018, which were like ultimately pretty good. And like, everyone is like, very gung-ho for like Nancy Pelosi to be Speaker of the House again. And like, it really stresses me out because people are making it about how like, we can't get, she's a woman, she can't be in charge. I'm like, yeah, but she gets all her money from corporations. Like, she's part of the fucking problem. Like, she's already, her like first thing that she did was come out and say that they're going to work bipartisanly. And like, one of the first bills that she's putting forward is like a bill to make it so you have to have a supermajority in the Congress to like, to make any additional raises to the middle class tax breaks. But it's like, so then you basically are giving like Republicans a veto power on raising taxes at all whatsoever, but that also kneecaps a lot of progressive movements like Medicare for All or free college of any kind, which would be, you know, adding, maybe making taxes a little bit bigger, but ultimately would pay off in the long run. But she's like already proposed that, but nobody is like talking about that. They're just like, but they connect her to Hillary, and Hillary was always their fucking mom. So it's like all this shit that I'm like, no, like, read about this and stop. They're, none of them are your friends. They're all lizard people. You know what I mean? Like,
do
like,
you believe in lizard people still?
No. I don't believe in lizard people, but I mean, I'm...
But have you seen all the YouTube videos with the lizards coming out on TV?
Yeah, man. Well, that's my real problem. Nobody's talking about the people below the Earth's surface.
At the Colorado airport, something's going on there.
I know. Have you seen that horse's eyes? It's crazy.
I believe in some of the conspiracy stuff. Yeah. Sometimes when I wake up, when I stay up really late at night, I think, I don't know, I get this urge to scare myself. And so I like go down a YouTube rabbit hole of ridiculous stuff.
No, I love reading about all that kind of stuff. Like, I'm fascinated by it because it's like any different person. Perspective on something makes it so you can also like argue against it if you need to, you know what I mean? It's like interesting to understand all as much as possible. But it's like, that's when I feel the most helpless, is like when I see people that are just like rallying around something and I'm like, no, but like, look for more facts. It isn't about you.
When you see people blindly believing something without investigating, which is like full circle of when you were in first grade.
Yeah, exactly. And
that makes sense.
A lot of people just are perfectly content to do that, or they personalize stuff that isn't personal, and it's like, this isn't about you, this is about everybody. But like, we just live in a society that, you know, puts you above all of us individually. And if we keep doing, I mean, it's, yeah, it's just like very deeply frustrating just to like watch the world keep working and just be like, all right, I don't see anything changing. And now, you know, I mean, it's like the climate change report came out that says, you know, within 10 years, if we don't reverse some shit, you know, that's do not pass go. We all don't collect $200, but it's like, I don't see the way things are right now making that switch in 10 years. So it's also like, all right, cool. The world's literally going to die because people want more money.
Wow.
Why did we evolve? Like, you know, it's just like crazy to be like, no other animal on earth does that. We're the ones that like have developed consciousness and like, that's what we did. Like dogs aren't trying to destroy the planet. You know, panda bears aren't trying to destroy the planet.
That one is.
Well, that one's got guns in its hands. But yeah, I mean, it's just, I just think about that all the time. I'm just like, we think we're this hot shit and we're just like the ones that are ruining all of it. So it's just like, cool. Cool humans. Good job.
Well, I feel sadder.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, this is like straight up like what I like, I talk about in like therapy and shit too. Cause I'm just like, I don't know. This is, it's bigger than me.
Well, you are in a position, I mean, you start off locally in your community and yeah. You are giving back. And mm-hmm. I think that does do something,
yeah.
Whether you see the results of that yeah. or not. Mm-hmm. And then also, like, as a performer, and a, you know, writer, mm-hmm. whatever,
yeah.
you when you do get your series or when you do get your whatever, yeah. you can keep that in mind mm-hmm. for the system that you set up yes. around that.
Yeah,
and absolutely. That could give more insight. You could be your own, like, Google in terms of, like, making...
Yeah.
offices fun or whatever it is yeah. that inspires more of a sense of community mm-hmm. and just like keep talking about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, definitely. That it is like one of those things where it is also finding like what is the line of like how much of the game do you have to play to get accrue any kind of power to to do what you need to.
Power is probably addictive as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You see that happen with people all the time. You know, and you're like, you were my friend. What happened? To a psychotic person.
Drunk with power.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they don't teach you how to handle power.
No. No. I mean, there's so many practical things in school that they don't go over.
No, they don't.
It's like, most people I know have debt because they like...
Exactly.
Yeah, don't know how to
they
deal
don't
with
teach
it.
People how to deal with money
yeah.
at all or any other
yeah.
life skills that you need, like communication.
Absolutely.
And...
Well, it should be like... And... It's so funny because we live in this, we talk about like the small businesses, small business owners, but like we don't, there should be programs in school that start from like an early age and are just like, this is how you run a business. Like
yeah.
what do you do? Like, it should
practical
be
practical stuff yeah. that people will mm-hmm. actually use.
Absolutely. And so. It's frustrating to like, not, like, it's like.
Do you plan on having kids?
No.
Not in this world?
No.
Is it because of that?
No. Well. Kind of a no. I don't particularly like them very much. I like being around them sometimes, but I always tire of being around kids where I'm like, okay, I can leave now. Like I've never seen a kid that I was like, I want that. Like I've never
really?
Yeah.
You don't have that urge inside your body?
Mm-mm. No.
That's so crazy.
No, I never have.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're the one that's married, so.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm upset about. Well, okay, we're going to wrap up this part of it. Usually I ask people what, if they had any takeaways from this. Did you have any takeaways at all? I'm sure you can make up something.
Yeah, I mean, it feels good to talk to somebody that also gets it. You've made me feel less alone because you're
understanding
it. Oh, that's
my job in life.
Right? Yeah. I appreciate that. Everybody in Colorado Donuts is the place to go. Everybody, look, the world's going to end. You might as well eat a donut while it happens.
So a good takeaway, I think, for me would be start looking in a first sense of community versus individualism.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really important, a really important thing to focus on.
Yeah. All right. Well, when we come back, we're going to talk to Brandy about her creative process, how she writes, and whatever creative stuff she does, how she decides on a new hair color. when we come back with A Little Advice.
Hi, and thanks again for listening to the Little Advice podcast. If you're having a good time, Please remember to rate, subscribe, share, and leave a little review. It helps more people find the podcast, and maybe it'll help them in some way. And if you'd like to see me do comedy in person, I will be at the Workaholics Comedy House on December 15th. Come on over and say hi. And if you'd like to talk more about this episode or just talk in general, head on over to Facebook and join the Little Advice Podcast Facebook group. Hope you guys are having a good day, and thanks again for listening to A Little Advice.
And we are back a couple sips of water and LaCroix later with A Little Advice. We're going to talk about Brandy's creative process. Mm-hmm. Brandy, you're a creator. What kind of things do you create?
Mostly stand-up comedy. I also have a podcast of my own, and I've written a couple of
them. What is it?
It's called Lady to Lady. It's myself.
Is it all ladies?
Yeah. It's me, Barbara Gray, and Tess Barger, and we have a guest one every week. It's a pretty good time. I'm very proud of it. We've had, we just had our 300th episode.
Wow!
It was pretty fun. We went to Beverly Hills, and we went to the Color Me Mine in Beverly Hills, and we took French Door with us from Third Rock from the Sun.
What?
We painted cups. Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous.
How did this happen? How did you get French Stewart? How do you record inside a public place?
We've got like headphones. We've got headphones with like a mic. Like you're an airline person. Yeah.
Did you guys all sit next to each other?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did like a two on each side of the table, and we're just like painting our cups while we're just talking and goofing around.
So how did you get French Stewart on your podcast?
This is our third time we've had him on.
He's a regular.
He's a friend of the show now. Yeah. So he was like Barbara, my co-host's high school crush. She like was obsessed with him like as a celebrity in high school. And Tess, my other co-host, she had a friend that did a play with French, and she's just like got a hold of him that way. And then he was like, "Yeah, sure, I'll come and do your thing."
That's a good impression.
Yeah, and then the first time that he came out, he was just like so cool. And he off mic was just like, "Look, I've done some bullshit. I don't care. Make fun of me, whatever. It'll be great." And then we told him on the podcast that Barbara used to have a crush on him, and he was just like so flattered. He was like, "Nobody cares about me." This is amazing. So we've like had him, we had like one regular episode with him, and then we had him on our 200th episode, which we recorded live at a Sizzler. And we do him all of our 100 episode specials we have him on now, just to be like,
"Oh, that's great."
Yeah. So that's our, we try to do that kind of thing.
So how do you guys come up with your show ideas?
It's mostly, it's the three of us. This is a 3-segment show. The first 20 is just us like riffing about whatever's happening. Cause like we've all been friends for, at this point over 10 years now.
Wow.
So it's like we're all busy doing different things. The podcast is really one of the only times we really get to see each other. So it's kind of just like, feels like a very like riffy brunch for the first 20 is just everybody just kind of hanging out and telling some stories. And we play like a sleepover game with our guests in the second half, third, which is like, would you rather? We have a game called like 5 questions where we'll just ask who, what, where, and why of like silly things. Or we used to have a game called Confession Session where we would like, each text a confession to our producer, and then he would make up a fake one. And then we would have like a robot voice say them, and we would try to guess whose was who. So we do like stuff like that. And then we do a lady problem segment, the third segment.
So it's not like you guys have to think about new topics every time. You have like a set format.
Yeah, we have a pretty set format. We do new questions every week, new would you rathers and stuff like that. And all the lady problems are emailed in.
Very cool. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So in terms of your stand-up, since that's what you create the most, what is your process like for writing or coming up with new jokes, bits?
Yeah, most of my bits are based off of, like, stuff that happens to me in the world. And I think my favorite kind of joke is when I either see something absurd or something that angers me and getting to, like, make it into, like, a metaphor or an allegory for something else, and then kind of like,
so Brandy.
Yeah, that's very me.
What are you working on now? What pissed you off lately?
I was at 7-Eleven a couple weeks ago, and as I was like walking out, I got to the door a few seconds before like an old man got to the door. And I put my hand on the door to like open it for him, and then he got to the door, and then he put his hand like above my hand as if just like he was like holding the door open for me. And then I just kind of laughed, and I put my hand above his hand.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did, just to be like, "Hey man, I was here first." But then he just went, fuck you. And he walked into 7-Eleven.
Are you kidding
me? No, I'm dead serious. And I just laughed at him. And I've been, like, writing a joke about like, ridiculous that is to be like...
He said, fuck you?
Yeah, he said, fuck... He turned red. He was mad at me. And I was like, I was making a joke.
I thought we were playing.
Yeah, okay. Glad this... Like, that's, like, the level of, like, where his chivalry is at. Where he's just like, no, no, little lady, I hold the door for you. And then when I was like, oh, buddy, that's okay. I got it. Like, just as a joke. Like, that's when he broke. And I was like, you don't actually respect women. You don't
know how to riff.
No, you for sure don't know how to riff. You'll never be on my podcast.
You're
old
not
man.
A gentleman. You'll never be on my podcast. You'll never he missed out an opportunity.
Yeah.
So don't let your sexism, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Make you miss. I couldn't finish that thought. You know what I meant.
Look, you missed a booking because of this. Get out of here, dude. But yeah, it's all, like that thing happened, which is like ridiculous. So I've been like writing a joke about how like that, like, that old man is to chivalry the way that, like, whenever you have, like, a quote-unquote cool boss that, like, tries to be like, oh, there's, like, Razor scooters in the office. And you're like, I just want healthcare. You know, I just want something that actually matters. I can, if you treat me like a human and give me all the same benefits that you do, then guess what? I can open all of my own doors. Yeah, I don't need you. Like, don't do this surface level bullshit.
You know, I told my ex-boyfriend something similar. I was like, you know, he's like talking about other things that were working in the relationship. I'm like, you know, if I'm cold and you give me a necklace, that's, I'm still cold. It's a nice necklace, but I need a sweater. You know what I mean? Like you can't.
You don't get to define the terms of the things that I need.
Yeah.
Like I know what I need. And like, so I, like that thing will happen. And then it's like, how can I make this joke about a higher point about this ridiculous thing.
Wow. Happened. Okay.
Yeah. Like that's usually like where it happened. And I was like, oh, you're going to be on an album someday, motherfucker. Like I'll find this joke.
It's a 7-Eleven in Eagle Rock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So be careful if you're around the area, get some donuts and careful who you open the door for.
Watch out for my 7-Eleven. But yeah, like that's my process. It's like finding.
Wow. That's a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, how can I make this bit about being a hand model a bigger thing in terms of capitalism?
Yeah. I do write some silly jokes every once in a while. I have like something that's silly, but like, yeah, most of my stuff like is at this point, I kind of just want it to be about something else. And I want to be sneaky about it too. Like not people to not, like, I don't want people to like, applaud because they believe the same thing that I do. I want them to laugh, and then like the point hits them afterwards. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like I don't want to just
like a smart person.
Yeah, like a smart person. But like, there is like a thing in comedy where people are just like, I agree with you, and like you're getting applause breaks versus
that's cheating.
Line. It is cheating, and I don't want that.
Give it up for the troops. Did you hear that applause break I got?
Get rid of the guns. And it's in LA, and everyone's like, yeah, we should. And I'm like, but what is the joke about?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like I try to. That's what I'm always trying to do, is figuring out how to, like, taking an absurd thing that happens to me and making it mean more.
Do you think the microphone picked up that loud noise?
Potentially. It's fine.
Okay.
It's okay. She gives it a little flavor.
It adds character.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
So.
But that's, like, kind of my style is that. And I...
When you go to write... So you basically collect... experiences and go from there. Do you have a set time that you write like every day or when it comes, it comes?
Yeah. I mean, I used to be more, so I've been doing stand up for over 10 years now. And like when I started, it was more, every word was written out and I would write these like pages of like, this bit is like, this is how you do it and perform it. And like then the more I did that, the more I was like, oh, this is like what my voice is. And you develop confidence where you don't need to, you know, I'm like, I can find the punchlines. Like, I know what the bullets I want to hit are. Now it's just getting to those. So I now will kind of just, like, when I'm driving around, I'll, like, think about a joke. And I'm like, oh, that's a funny idea that'll go with it. And I'll kind of just jot down a couple of notes. And I'll kind of just write on stage with, like, where I want to go. Because, like, if I can get a good crowd that has, like, some decent energy, that's kind of usually where I'll find, like, a new punch that I didn't have, or, like, a tag or something that I didn't have before.
That's great.
Yeah, so that's kind of, like, where I've gotten with it. You know, I mean, I'll usually, and I'll kind of just play with, I know pretty much immediately know if an idea has legs or not. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of figuring out what the full version of that bit is, too. You know,
and so. You do that by just talking it out on stage.
Yeah, and just goofing around with it on stage. I mean, like, I always, like, I never really phone in sets, or try not to, at least. I'm always just like, all right, cool, let me start with something big and then play with, I don't know, with something in the middle and then close with something that people like, too. So it's like, even if the middle doesn't work as well as the two, that's the part I'm working on. It's like, I know how to, like, start and end strong.
I have trouble with that because I feel like some of my bits that are like, these are intro bits, these are middle bits, these are closing bits.
Yeah.
And a lot of, when I have new jokes, they come in as I try to find where they belong in my set.
Yeah.
So it's like, I have to do this joke in order for this to hit because this is where I want to put it.
Totally.
So that's interesting. Do you ever have anything like that?
No, because mine are all pretty self-contained for the most part. My biggest issue is that my jokes are usually between, like, 2 and 3 minutes long, as is. So whenever I'm trying to work on late night sets, it's, like, impossible to figure out what the hell 4.5 minute looks like. Because I'm just like, okay, I have to, like, chop up some other stuff and figure out a way to, like, do what I want, but then also have enough variety because they don't want to hear, like, one joke, basically. So it's, like, that... That, like, short sets are, like, where I kind of have a little bit more of a problem. Because I'm like, okay, I can't get all of the punches for this idea in. What can I remove? And then what does that do to the flow of it or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always hear that it's harder for headliners to do shorter sets.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you're like, what? My 5 minutes are up. I just got started.
Yeah. You're like, I'm just warming up. What's going on?
Well, because you just spend the first couple minutes of a long set just kind of, like, resetting the table and just like
getting acquainted.
Yeah, people get to know you and you just don't have to come out and just like, and then here's my thoughts on this, you know, and which is a good skill to also have, but it is like difficult when you also like write long form. So,
So, before any major success in your life that you can think of, which is personal or professional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're welcome. Professional. What is a mind shift, if any, that you've had?
Well, so I put out my first album almost 3 years ago now, actually. February, it'll be 3 years.
That was 3 years ago?
Yeah. Right? Because I'm going to be 34? No, I'll be 35. Yeah, because it was my 32nd, right before my 32nd birthday.
Wow, time flies.
Yeah, yes it does. Yeah, so I, my mom passed away almost 5 years ago, and, my album, I put my album out on the 2 year anniversary of my mom's death because I wanted to reclaim that day for myself, basically.
Okay.
And before her death, I like couldn't really go on the road that much because I just was like, at any point I need to be able to fly to Maryland and like help out, be available in a lot. And it like,
do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have a younger brother.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was just, like, time was...
No, no, yeah, yeah. I meant to ask you that earlier. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, I have a younger brother. He's a good kid.
Is he in Maryland?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, he's in Maryland. He's a contractor. He's married. His wife's awesome. Like, it's good. We got a good fam. I'm very lucky.
Sorry to interrupt with that question.
No, it's fine. I love thinking about my brother. He's a good guy.
What's his name, Tom?
Eric.
Eric, okay. Mm-hmm.
Charles Eric Posey.
Charles? I love that name.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Sorry.
No, go ahead. No, it's good. But I, like, was here just kind of, like, grinding at shows and stuff, and then would just be by the phone waiting, and, like, had a lot of material, and just... when my mom passed away, I kind of made the decision that I was like, I had some jokes about like the grief process that like had, in my mind had kind of a limited shelf life because I was like, I love these bits. They have an emotional resonance to them that are very honest and I need to record them within the next year or two because I don't want to have to do them anymore. Cause I also didn't want them to like get to the same place where jokes that weren't emotionally important to me felt. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Where I was like, nah, I would like to put these down and like capture this moment in time and these jokes and move on from them. And basically like how I like a big part of like me processing like my mom passing away was like I just started touring. I just was like, I don't care. I'm gonna go on the road and just like yell about how my mom's dead to strangers every night in the middle of the country. And it was like, it helped me heal a lot. Cause I was like, I trusted myself.
Had
completely.
You toured before that?
I'd done festivals, but
so
never.
This you were like.
This is like first time like headlining. I'd done a couple of like long sets here in LA, here or there. And I used to run a show called The 4 and 20 that was like four comics doing 20 minutes each. And it was just like figure out how to be a feature, just 20 minutes each. The only people that came every week were these like two homeless dudes and named Wheelchair Bob and Arturo. They're my boys. Mm. They would come every week. They loved it. And like aww. If you could make them laugh, then any audience will laugh at you. It's fine. Because they were like, what are you guys talking about? We don't have iPhones, you know? So it's like, if like they know your references, then you're golden. You know? So I'd done that for like 2.5, 3 years before I really started going on the road. So I'd been doing long sets in LA, but like, and I'd met a lot of people at festivals around the country. So it kind of was like, okay, I know who to hit up to like, go figure this out. And at first it was kind of like, well, let's see if I have an hour. I don't even know if I do. And yet after that first week of doing long sets, I was like, oh yeah, it's there. I just don't know exactly what it is yet or in like what order and what that feels like. So I kind of just started, I think my first tour, I built around like three different weddings I had on like the East Coast.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. It was like the three weddings and a comedy tour is what I called it. And like, I basically just like, you know, did that and like was gone for 6 weeks, I think. And
wow.
Yeah.
That's a long time, especially with your first one.
Yeah. Yeah. It was
a
lot.
A really long time.
Yeah. It was a lot. But it was also pretty good because it was like I had a wedding basically every week, every week and a half, basically. So it was like I got to kind of like take a day or two off, see some friends, like be a person again.
Yeah.
And then would like go back into comedy mode. So it gave me like little breaks during that, which were good. But yeah, it just, I kind of figured out pretty quickly that I just poured myself into that work and was like, cool, I'm going to put this out and I'm going to like, and I pretty quickly also was like, I'm going to put it out on like the anniversary of my mom's death. Cause I want that day to like feel like a birth at the same time too. Mm-hmm. So I'm not mourning it every year. I like wouldn't have necessarily lit this fire under myself if it wasn't for her. So it was a way to like, you know, give back to her too.
So
a little
it was
bit.
Like this grief mm-hmm. is what fueled you to
for sure.
to take that leap in touring because mm-hmm. it's scary to tour for your first time, especially
oh,
if you're doing it by yourself.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. as a you know, as a woman, you're mm-hmm. going all these different places.
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be really scary.
Yeah. Well, it's like I've always known that like I when I am prone to depression, but it's also like I know that I can either push myself or I can let myself sink. And if I sink, then I will sink for a long time. Because I like did that when, I mean, in high school. Like I remember like having like my senior year was like bad. I mean, 9/11 happened. So, you know, that's like part of it for sure.
Yeah.
I had a really bad breakup and 9/11 happened kind of at the same time. So
wow.
It was like, and I didn't have like the coping mechanisms yet quite to deal with it. And then I remember my grandmother died after I graduated college. And I moved home for, like, the holidays. So I was going to move up to LA, like, right after I graduated. But then I was like, no, I should be here to, like, help everybody. And that way I don't have to fly back, like, 2 months later or whatever. And I remember, like, I moved to LA that January 1st, like, after that holiday season. Because I was like, I gotta go. Because I can feel myself, like, staying here. And I don't want to sit in this because I know what'll happen if that it will become harder to leave if I let myself start to sink.
So part of your coping mechanism is to mm-hmm. get moving.
Yeah. Yeah. Always. Yeah.
That's
and I mean,
good
like,
to know.
Yeah. And like, it is also like, and processing the thing. I try to be as aware as possible of not like being a workaholic by ignoring something, you know, where it's like,
so how do you do that? How do you find the balance?
I mean, you know, walking and crying. don't sit and cry. You know, like be
get
like,
in your car and die.
Yeah,
actually, I mean, it can be a little dangerous, but I've done
bit.
It. I have.
Oh yeah. Well, the reason I went to therapy the first time is when I moved out to LA. Like I knew one person out here, and she was nuts. She was a friend of mine from college that like had come out here 6 months before me, and she got really into diet pills and really bought into the whole LA shit and was just like...
It's been 6 months?
Yeah. It was... She works in the music industry, which is, like, even more toxic
than
her. So it was, like, bad. And,
That's saying something.
Yeah.
It's worse than comedy.
Yeah, I know. It's horrific. It's like, oh, God, really? But she was, like, literally friends with suicide girls and stuff. And they would just, like, be at our apartment all the time. And I was like, oh, my God, I hate this. But I would, like, She was the only person that knew me. So I was like a PA when I first moved out here, and I'd be like going on runs to like Target to pick up stuff. And I would just like burst into tears because like, I was like, I'm grieving the loss of my grandmother. I'm in a place where nobody knows me or cares about me or even knew her. So I was, and I would just be driving around the city.
Felt so isolated.
Oh, completely, completely. And I just remember, just driving around with like fucking Starbucks in my car, taking it to executive producers that didn't give a shit who I was. And then would just be like sobbing, waiting for Starbucks. And then I very quickly was like, oh, you gotta go to therapy because this can't last.
Did people stare at you while you were crying?
Probably, yeah. I mean, I was just such a mess. I don't care. But yeah, I started going to therapy like pretty quickly after that.
And that helped?
Yeah, immediately. Yeah.
What kind of therapy was it?
Cognitive behavioral.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like understanding the grief process. I really liked my therapist. She was awesome. And I like I've gone back to her a couple different points in my life too. And, it just like being able to talk to somebody that understood and gave me this space was like huge. And then also just like, this is normal. This is how grief works. You have done a lot of things that a lot of people would not be willing to do. Like, you are uncomfortable because you've made a lot of uncomfortable choices that are going to be good, but it's just kind of
even
like...
Even if you make have a good life change, like getting married or moving, like, it's still stress and it's still scary.
Absolutely.
Did you have any physical ailments during that time?
No. That's no, good. I mean... No, not really. I'm trying to think. No, I had breast reduction surgery a couple years ago. That's something I'd always wanted to do. And that was kind of also like right before my mom died. Cause it's like a part of my body that I always hated and was just like time to deal with it basically. Because I just remember I've never really had a lot of like body issues or anything like that. Like cause my mom had a lot of them. And I remember like going to, like, go visit her in, like, she was in the hospice for the last 3 years of her life. And you'd go and you'd visit her, and she would just be like, I never got as skinny as I wanted to be. And I remember her talking to me about that. And I was like, you're literally on your deathbed, and you're regretting that you never had the body you thought you were going to have.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. And I remember just being like, oh, fuck this. I got to figure out my own shame shit now. And
so it was kind of like when you're like, when you were punishing yourself as a kid for not getting an A, you're like, I can't let this control me.
Yeah, I was like, absolutely not. No, I will not be in this same position.
Did you have a mental shift that helped with that?
Yeah. I think getting breast reduction surgery helped a lot because that was always like this one thing that I had really big boobs. I used to have like double G's basically. I still have they're like D's now. It's like they're still a thing, but they're like manageable now for me. Like, I used to not be able to like wear jackets because I felt like a football player. Like, it was bad.
And it probably hurt your back.
Yeah. Well, that's like how I got like a letter from a doctor that was like, she has back problems. And like, I got it paid. Most was paid by my insurance. Like, I think it only cost me like $2,000 for the whole thing. But it was like, one, I consider that like moving to LA, starting comedy, and getting breast reduction surgery are like the three greatest gifts I've ever given myself. Because, and a lot of it was, like, this impetus of, like, seeing my mom deeply unhappy. And that wasn't an issue that she had necessarily, but it was also, like, she hated her body. And I was like, this is the thing that I hate about it, and I can change it. I just haven't, because for some reason I, like, you know, I'd been told by, like, male doctors before, you should just try to lose some weight or whatever instead. And it's just like... No, I can do this.
Keep those titties. We like them.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, too. It's just like, oh, no, they're here because this is the thing that, like, literally men would just talk to me and they just talk to my boobs. It would happen all the time. And I was like, I'm here. I'm a person. I'm not defined by this. And I just remember, like, I posted something online about, hey, I didn't tell anybody until like 48 hours before surgery. And I remember posting online and being like, FYI, I'm getting breast reduction surgery in 48 hours. I'm not interested if you have anything bad to say about it. They were never for you. They never will be for you.
Okay.
You know, and like, and then it was interesting because I got a bunch of messages from people and a lot of guys that were like, my mom got it done, or like my aunt or my sister got it done, and it's the best thing she ever did for herself.
Wow.
You know, because it was just like choosing to desexualize myself a little bit in a way that I have, you know, I have control over, you know, and I just like wasn't, it was always the one thing on, I'm more free on stage than I was before that too, where it was like, that was always the one thing that if a heckler went after that, it would hurt me. It was always, and it was just this visual thing that I always felt defined me more than I could define myself.
Did you have jokes about it?
I have like a pretty great breast reduction joke on my album that I'm like really proud of.
But when you were doing stand up with the, you didn't?
Okay. No, I hated them so much I didn't even want to talk about them.
Wow.
I just didn't even want to talk about them. It felt like they were in control. And if I talked about them, it was giving them even more power.
They're like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
You can't see. So you can just imagine it, and then I'm playing with my boobs.
We run this stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, it's been so fun talking with you. Yeah. I feel like I've learned a lot. And it's just been really interesting to hear your story.
Oh, cool.
Where can people find you? Well, we already went over this, but tell them again.
Yeah. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Brandazzle. BrandyPosey.com is my website. It has all my tour dates and all my social links as well. Brandy Posey on Facebook.com/BrandyPosey. Take my fan page. And then I have a podcast called Lady to Lady that comes out every Wednesday. We also have a Patreon with additional content if you want anything. If you really like us, you'll hear about that on my show, though. and then my album is called Opinion Cave. And you can listen to that wherever you listen to albums.
Awesome. Well, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, even if you don't, just rate it 5 stars.
Yes,
share
it. Do it.
Leave a review. And I'll give you a shout out on the podcast. Really appreciate it. Thank you guys so much for listening to A Little Advice.